We're in Acts 21, and we're picking up right where we left off. Actually, if you're a real good note taker and you have notes from last year, you're going to realize that we're actually overlapping just a little because of the nature of the story and kind of to bring you back in to where we left off last time. So it's my privilege to be able to walk you through this. And so as you think about the book of Acts is a journey. It's a journey that's going to take us to about the end of July. And remember, Acts was written by a doctor. It was written by Dr. Luke. Very precise, very detailed. If you're a detail person, you will love the book of Luke and the book of Acts, both of which Luke wrote, because he took great pains to have detail. And as you walk through this, it's the birth of the early church. It begins with the ascension of Jesus in Acts chapter 1 when they're standing and staring and he's being caught up into the sky. And it takes us all the way through the day of Pentecost in Acts chapter 2 and then the early beginning of the church. And then it chronicles the lives of missionaries like Peter and like Paul. We left off last year in the third missionary journey of Paul. As you know, he takes three journeys. This third one will take him all the way back to Jerusalem, which we're about to read about. And he's going to get in trouble there, and that's going to eventually lead him to Rome, where he'll die. So we're kind of in this last cycle. I put a map up on the screen for you, just so you could kind of see this third journey. And so a couple months back, I get to visit right over there at Athens. And so he's in Corinth and Athens, and then Berea, Philippi, and then over to Asia and down through Ephesus and all the way down. And he ends in Jerusalem, and that's kind of where we are. So just to catch you up, what's going on in the story that we're about to read and chronicle and walk through is that Paul came to Jerusalem, and he came bringing a collection, a large collection of money. In fact, as a lot of writers write, that it probably took several, like a train of animals to carry this money that was collected by all these new churches, these Gentile churches, to aid the brethren in Jerusalem that were going through a really bad financial time. And so Paul led them to give money, and they gave faithfully, and he's taking that money on a journey back to Jerusalem. When he gets there, he stays in the house of a Christian man named Manassen. We don't know a lot about him, except that it does record that. And the very next day after his travel, he gets up and he meets with James, who, as you know, was the brother of Jesus. He's also the pastor of the church in Jerusalem, or lead elder. He meets with James and the other elders in Jerusalem to give them this gracious gift that he brought to them. So it must have been an exciting day. We don't know a ton about it because there's not that much detail there, but after a proper greeting for each elder, Paul narrated detail by detail the things that God had done all the way up and down the coast, all the things that he had seen. Can you imagine hearing this from the lips of Paul? As he talked about the stories of people coming to faith in Jesus, how he was beaten for his faith, but a whole city came to know Jesus as a result of it. He tells this story. And he chronicles all these details with these elders. If you read it, again, not a lot said, but what's apparent is that their reaction is kind of disappointing. They made the appropriate thank yous and praise to God for what he'd done. And then they very quickly turned to a pressing affair that's on their mind. You see, they were really concerned about how the other Jews in the area, the brethren, had perceived Paul, this Jew that had gone to the Gentiles. And tensions were strong. They were rising in Jerusalem over this. And so they exchanged a little bit of detail. We're going to read about this in a moment. They exchanged a little bit of detail, and then they instructed Paul to do something. They told him they wanted him to go to the temple and pay to participate in the Jewish cleansing ritual. Now, although Paul honored the law, he didn't practice the Jewish ceremonial laws any longer because of his ministry to the Gentiles. This was a very, very difficult situation, a very rough place to put Paul in. But you're going to hear in our text today that he agrees to do it. And then earlier, outside of the temple, Jews, probably Jews from Ephesus, we don't know for sure, but probably Jews from Ephesus had seen Paul. And they had seen him there with an Ephesian man who had been converted. Now they see him inside the temple with four other men in this cleansing ceremony. They can't see who they are, but they jump to the conclusion that Paul had taken Gentiles from Ephesus into the sacred area, defiling it forever, which he had not done, but that's what they thought. So immediately, Immediately, they're enraged by what is going on. Acts 21 tells us that. I hope that gives you a little idea of what you're about to hear. Verse 27 says, when the 7 days were almost over, the Jews from Asia, upon seeing Paul in the temple, began to stir up the crowd. And they laid hands on him, crying out, "Men of Israel, come to our aid. This man who preaches to all men everywhere against our people and the law in this place, and besides this, he's even brought Greeks into the temple and defiled this holy place." For they had previously seen Trophimus, the Ephesian, in the city with Paul. And so they supposed that Paul had brought him into the temple, which he had not. Then all the city was provoked, and all the people rushed together, taking hold of Paul, and they dragged him out of the temple. And immediately the doors were shut. And while they were seeking to kill him, a report came to the commander of the Roman cohort that all Jerusalem was in confusion. And at once he took some soldiers and centurions and he ran down to them. And when they saw the commander and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul. And when the commander came up and took hold of him, he ordered him to be bound by 2 chains. And he began asking him who he was and what he'd done. The crowd was shouting one thing and some another. And when he could not find out the facts because of the uproar, he ordered him brought back to the barracks. And when he got in to the stairs, he was carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the mob. For the multitude of the people kept following them and shouting, "Away with him." This is what happened in the life of our missionary, in the life of Paul. This riot ensued. And the riot was similar to the riot we read about in Ephesians, in Ephesus, in Acts chapter 19. Paul was literally being torn limb from limb by these people when the Roman soldiers, under the command of Claudius Lysias, the garrison commander of about 1,000 men, he came to his rescue. And he questioned Paul about what he'd done. He said, but he couldn't hear because the noise was so loud. And so he takes Paul into the citadel, into the garrison where he could actually question him. Verse 37, as Paul was about to be brought into the barracks, he said something to the commander. He said, may I say something to you? And as he said it, the commander said, do you know Greek? Are you not the Egyptian who some time ago had stirred up a revolt and led 4,000 of the assassins into the wilderness? And Paul said, I am a Jew of Tarsus in Sicily, a citizen of no insignificant city, and I beg you, allow me to speak to the people. And when he had given permission, Paul, standing on the stairs, motioned to the people with his hand. And there with a great hush, he spoke to them in Hebrew dialect. And so Claudius had taken Paul into this protective custody. And he thought Paul, as we read a moment ago, was this Egyptian. He thought he was an Egyptian that he had heard about that had recently caused an uprising. And Paul speaks to him in Greek, which caught him completely off guard. And even when you read it, what Paul says, he even adds a quote by Euripides, which was a Greek playwright of 400 BC, which led this man to know that Paul was not some dumb person, that he was an educated person. Claudius is taken off guard by this, and he allows Paul to address the mob, which Paul addresses, we read here in Hebrew dialect, which is really Aramaic. And Claudius, he would have known a little of this language, but not enough to be able to follow the speech that Paul was about to make. And so what we see is Paul, even though he's wounded and chained and he's been basically almost torn limb from limb, he begins to speak. And as he does, the crowd's yells begin to diminish and they begin to listen to him. And even though his head must have been throbbing for all he had gone through, Paul does this on-the-spot speech that's one of the most winsome presentations of the gospel presented in all of Scripture. Let's read it. It begins in Acts chapter 22. He says, "Brethren and fathers, hear my defense, which I now offer to you." And when they heard that he was addressing them in the Hebrew dialect or Aramaic, they became even more quiet. And he said, "I am a Jew born in Tarsus of Sicily, but brought up to this city and educated under Gamaliel, strict according to the law of our fathers, being zealous for God, just as you are today. I persecuted this way to death, binding and putting both men and women into prisons, as also the high priest and the council of the elders can testify. From them I also received letters to the brethren, and I started off for Damascus in order to bring those who were there to Jerusalem as prisoners to be punished. But it happened that as I was on the way approaching Damascus about noontime, a very bright light suddenly flashed from heaven around me. And I fell to the ground, and I heard a voice saying to me, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" And I answered, "Who are you, Lord?" And he said, I am Jesus, the Nazarene, who you are persecuting. Those who were with me saw the light, to be sure, but they did not understand the voice of the one who was speaking to me. And I said, "What shall I do, Lord?" And the Lord said to me, "Get up and go on to Damascus, and there you will be told all that has been appointed for you to do." But since I could not see because of the brightness of the light, I was led by my hand by those who were with me, and I came into Damascus. And a certain Ananias, a man who was a devout by every standard of the law and well spoken of by all the Jews who lived there, he came to me, and standing near me, "Brother Saul," he said, "receive your sight." And at that very time, I looked up and I saw him. And he said, "The God of our fathers has appointed you to know his will and to see the righteous one and hear an utterance from his mouth. For you will be a witness to him, to all men, of what you've seen and what you've heard. Now why do you delay? Get up and get be baptized and wash away your sins, calling on his name." And it happened when I returned to Jerusalem and I was praying in the temple that I fell into a trance. And I saw him saying to me, "Make haste and get out of Jerusalem quickly, because they will not accept your testimony of me." And I said, "Lord, they themselves understand that in the synagogue after synagogue and after another, I used to imprison and beat those who believed in you. And when the blood of your witness Stephen was being shed, I was also standing by there approving and watching out for the coats of those who were slaying him." And he said to me, "Go, for I will send you far away to the Gentiles." Paul stands up there. Can you picture this? Having almost been killed, he's taken by these prisoners, carried on, or by these soldiers, carried on their backs up into this place, and this man's before him, has the right to kill him, and he steps up to the plate, and he shares his story. What a powerful story of a life. We talked a lot over the last couple of years about our stories and how our stories mean so much to people, how that when we share our stories, they captivate people. And that's exactly what Paul did. He steps up, and in their language, he tells them exactly what had happened in his life. I want us just to kind of think about this a little bit today as we kind of walk through this passage. First of all, you see in his story in verses 1 to 5 that his life before, what was his life like before? Well, you read that Paul was, and he tells them, he was a Jew. And that was important to them. He was born in Tarsus. And then as he tells his story, he was taken as a small boy to be educated by a rabbi, Gamaliel, in the strictest manner of the law in Jerusalem. That he was a persecutor of the Christians. He tells us that he was one who ran down and hunted out people who were of the way or new believers in Jesus. Now, this was a perfect example to them of a good Jewish boy. This was winsome. This is what every one of them would have wanted for their son. And so he begins to describe what his life was like, how he was righteous in his own eyes and trying to do the right thing. And this is what his life was like. This is how he was as a boy and how he lived his life and what occurred. And then in verses 6 to 16, he tells the story of how he met Jesus. He tells them about this experience on the Damascus Road that we read about in Acts chapter 8 and 9, and the story about how he was walking on the road, going to get more people that he was going to take prisoners and have beaten or killed for their faith. And you know the story, but he tells them about he was walking along, and if you ever get to go to Jerusalem, you can kind of stand and you can look down, and they point to the road where this would have taken place, and you can see where this was. He tells us about this experience of how he was blinded, and how he met Jesus, how he came into a relationship with God through Jesus. This man who had studied the law and knew all about the Old Testament now met the Jesus that the Old Testament talked about. And now Ananias and Paul mentions him, who was a respected Jew, someone they would have known about, came to him and called him brother. He tells about how he had 3 days of blindness before Ananias came, and then how Ananias prayed for him and he received his sight, this miracle. Then he talks about being in Damascus and then 3 years in Arabia before he goes home to Tarsus for an extended time. And then his ministry to the Gentiles began. He tells about this life change that happened for him. And then he shares about how his life changed and about how God called him in verses 17 to 21. He talks all about what happened after he met Jesus, how things for him became very different. He talks about what it looked like for God to call him and what God told him to do. He tells about how he argued with God's calling, how that when God called him to do it, that he didn't want to do it. He says to God in the story, I'm the one who imprisoned and beat Christians. And he even recollects, as he must have so often played over in his mind, the story of Stephen. We know that was a profound impact in his life when he stood there and he watched Stephen being killed, saying, don't hold this against them. Paul was holding their coats, as he tells here. And then he tells how God said to him, I'm sending you far away to the Gentiles. I'm sending you to be a missionary to those who have never heard. You see in chapter 22, verse 22, what happens. It says they listened to him up to this statement. Up to the point that he said, for God will send you far away to the Gentiles. They listened to him up to this statement. And then they raised their voices and said, away with such a fellow from the earth, for he should not be allowed to live. And as they were crying out and throwing off their coats and tossing dust into the air, the commander ordered him to be brought into the barracks, stating that he should be examined by scourging so that they might find out the reason why they were shouting against him this way. When they had stretched him out with the thongs, behold, Paul said to the centurion who was standing by, is it lawful for you to scourge a man who is a Roman and uncondemned? And when the centurion heard this, he went to the commander and he told him, saying, what are you about to do? For this man is a Roman. And the commander came to him and said, tell me, are you a Roman? And he said, yes. The commander answered, I acquired my citizenship with a large sum of money. And Paul said, I was actually born a citizen. Therefore, those who were about to examine him immediately let go of him. And the commander also was afraid when he found out that he was a Roman, because he had put him in chains. Paul says, God has sent me, telling his story and his calling, God has sent me to the Gentiles. And that did it. It was like striking a match in dry straw. Everything exploded. Claudius, who was losing the riot at this moment, had Paul taken into the torture chamber to kind of beat the truth out of him. It was a terrible place. And Paul probably realized that he was about to die, honestly. Just as all this was about to begin, Paul tells them he's a Roman. They were about to beat a Roman without a trial, and this could end badly for all of them. So everything came to a screeching halt. But as you think about this, you understand Paul's story. And I want us to focus in for just a few closing minutes today on the power of the story, because Paul's story was so captivating as he talked about his life before he met Jesus, how he met Jesus, and what his life looked like after he met Jesus. Paul used this to move audience. He would often share his story to move audiences around him. So let me ask you today, why are stories so powerful? Have you ever thought about that? Why are they so powerful? Why, when you share your story, do people listen so intently? I think there's a few reasons. I just want to kind of share with you and get you thinking about this today. I think when we share our story, we share a part of us. And I think as we tell our story and as we begin to do this, we kind of give a gift to people because we let them in on who we are. And people like that. I think stories are powerful because stories are genuine. They're real. If I'm telling your story or a story about someone else, that's powerful. It can grab people, but nothing like me telling mine. When I look somebody in the eye and I say, let me tell you about me. Let me tell you about what my life was like. Let me tell you about what changed in me. It's real. I think they're powerful because others can relate to them. People can relate to our story. Now, they may not be able to relate to every part of our story, but they can relate to parts of it, and they begin to kind of connect with us. And they think, oh, yeah, I remember growing up like that, or I like doing that, and they kind of connect with us. And then I think stories really work because stories, this is the most important reason, stories provide hope. They provide hope. And I'll tell you why they provide hope. I think many times you've sat here and heard a story, or you've seen a video and heard a story, or you've talked to someone. Some of you are here today and you have placed your faith in Jesus because someone told a story that moved you, much like what Paul did. And here's what we think in our minds. We think, if it worked for them, it could work for me. That's what stories do. They let us think that. We begin to grab onto something. Well, if that person was like that and God changed them, if their marriage was like that and God restored their marriage, if they were in a financial place, and God, then maybe God could do that for me. This is why it's so important for us to share our stories with people. So let me ask you a couple of questions for you to think about today. First, what's your story? What's your story like? What was your story and your life like before you met Jesus? Think for just a moment with me about that, would you? Now, for some of you, some of us, we were saved very early, but others of you met Jesus just a couple of months ago or years ago. Or what was your life like? Where was your life heading? What did you feel in the inside? What did you do? What was your life like before you met Jesus? Paul tells us about his, and it wasn't sad, really. I mean, after the fact, he understands the error of his way, but he was doing all these things for God. What was your life like before you met him? And then how did you come into a relationship with God through Jesus? What took place? I love hearing stories, and I always tell somebody, I want to kind of smell it and feel it and hear it. And what was it like? Were you in vacation Bible school? Were you in a Sunday school? Were you sitting down with your parents? Were you in a church service? Something you heard on TV? Was it a song? Was it a friend who shared Christ with you? How did you come into a relationship with God through Jesus? And then how's your life changed since then? How have you become different since you met Jesus? What has changed for you? We call this the satisfied customer part of the story, right? But like, what has happened to you? How have you become different? And what's God's call on your life? And in the case of the Apostle Paul, in his story, he says, and God called me to this very special work. We looked on the video or the screen a moment ago about this journey to the Gentiles. What has God called you to do? What's your story? And then let me ask you this. How are you living out the call that God has placed on your life? That's really powerful. You know, when you share that with somebody, I know for me, when I tell my story and I talk about what I do and I talk about moving here and being a part of watching this church go, people kind of, they zoom in. And I'm sure that's true with you when you talk about how you prayed for God to send you a godly husband and he did, or you prayed for God to use you in a ministry and he is, or you prayed for God to give you a child and he did, or you prayed for, you know, your brother to come to Christ and he has. Whatever that is. As you begin living out that call and sharing that call, God uses that in the lives of people. He did with Paul, right? Paul talks about this call that God has placed on his life. So let me ask you, are you obeying what God has told you to do? Are you doing what God has called you to do? Now, Paul did it, and he did it at the risk of his life. And then the third question I have for you to think about today is, are you regularly sharing your story? Now, I know we've talked about that a lot over the last couple of months and even years as a church. If you've been around here, you've heard that for a long time. But I just kind of want to bring that up again this summer, because summer is such a great time of cooking out, of going to the ballpark with your kids, of meeting your neighbors in the front yard that you don't see all winter long, right? You know, they're out. It's just a great time of being with family. And so let me ask you, are you regularly sharing your story with people? I want to bring that thought back to your mind, as that's what this text is about today. It's about Paul sharing his story. And so I want you to think about you sharing your story. I know for me, I do this all the time, and I love doing it. I do it a lot of times, done it with a lot of you. A lot of folks come to our church and folks that I meet. I love to sit down with them. I love to talk with them. I'm by nature more of a shy person than I am a outgoing person, but I'll sit down with somebody and I try to have a conversation. And as I'm doing that, if they want to talk about sports, I do my best. If they want to talk about hunting, fishing, I do my best. If I just kind of talk with them as you would. If it's family, that's easy, right? If it's a good friend, that's easy. You know. And somewhere in there, I usually look at them and I'll ask them. And I know this is kind of hard, but it's not that hard. And I'll look at them and I'll say, can I tell you my story? Now, I know there's probably somebody out there who'll do this, but I've never had anyone yet say no. I think that'd be really rude, right? No one's ever said that to me. No, I don't want to hear your story. Everybody always says, sure. And you know what I've done? I've worked on it. And when I teach multipliers, I try to teach multipliers to do this in 2 minutes or less. But I worked on trying to make my story pretty straightforward in a couple, 2 or 3 minutes. Now, my story's not that great, to be honest. I talk about how I grew up in West Virginia, how I grew up in a very small town, very outdoors, how my dad was a pastor of a church, but how being a pastor's kid didn't mean that I was in a relationship with God, and how I was 7 years old and went to a church service and don't even remember what they said, but remember that God touched my life and I felt a need to meet Jesus, and I told them about how I went home and got down on my knees by my bed and invited Jesus to come into my life and how my life has changed. And if you're somebody that has a really exciting pre-story, like you came to Christ later, you spend more time on that, but I didn't have really exciting. I wasn't selling drugs or anything at seven. I don't know. I didn't have that much. And so I don't spend a lot of time on the front side, but I spend a lot of time on the back side, telling about how my life has gone, how my life hasn't been perfect, but how I've had a great life. God's given me a great family. He's given me a chance to help people, that I have joy and peace in my life. And I don't hold back telling about the good things. The Bible talks a lot about bringing praise to God for the good things he's done. And I think a lot of times as Christians, we fail to do that. And when we fail to do that, we fail to highlight all the things God has done for us. And I try to do that. And when I'm done, they smile. And it's kind of a natural thing. It's not as hard as you think. I will then look at them and say, how about you? I'd love to hear your story. I love hearing stories. Now, I've already kind of set this up. It's kind of an expectation. I learned this a long time ago. I told you I was kind of more of an introvert than an extrovert. And I remember reading this book that said that you can kind of get people to react in a certain way. I never knew this. I thought this was the coolest thing ever. It said that if you go up and you say, hi, I'm Tim, somebody will say hi, and they'll give you their first name. The book said, if you say, hi, I'm Tim Parsons, they'll say, hi, I'm, they'll give you your first and last name. Try it. It works. They said, if you go up to somebody and you say, hi, I'm Tim Parsons, and I'm a pastor of a church, they'll say, hi, I'm da-da-da-da, and I work at Lowe's. They'll tell you back kind of what you do. It's kind of a trick of the trade. It works really well. And so here's what I've learned. If I share my story first, and I'm clear about how Jesus changed me, they kind of know what I'm asking. And so they'll tell me something. And I listen really carefully to hear if what they're saying says something about the gospel. If I hear that they know Jesus, then I go, oh, great. If not, the hardest part of it is I say to them, would you mind if I tell you how you could meet Jesus like I did? And that leads me into the gospel. I just want to encourage you to think about this summer. I know it's really simple, and we've talked about this a lot, but just a simple question. Who could you target this week, next week, sometime this summer to share with? If you sit down and think about it, I bet you'll think about family reunions, about cookouts, about people that you hang out at the ballpark with. I'll bet God will bring somebody to your mind, and you could begin right now to pray for an opportunity. I know you're nervous about it. You could practice your story like I do mine, and then you could get there over coffee or over a milkshake or just hanging out over a burger, and you could say, hey, I don't think I've ever told you my story. Do you mind if I tell you my story? And just like Paul did, you talk about how you were before, how you met Jesus, and how you've changed. And then you ask them, would you mind sharing yours? And you just begin to pray for God to open a door with your mother-in-law, with the guy you work with that other dad who coaches ball beside you, with some neighbors that you don't talk to all winter long. And if God lays some names on your heart, I would love for you to share those names with me so I can pray for you. I would love to be able to hear from you so that I could help you to do this. I wanted today for you to hear a story. It's one of the most powerful stories of life change that I've heard in the last couple of years. And it's somebody that goes right here to our church. And I've asked Dan Kostelski to come. Dan, come on up here. Give Dan a hand, would you? So he feels welcome. This is Dan, and Dan, have a seat with me, man. And Dan and I get the privilege of hanging out. A lot of you know him, real good friends with the Hollies, and thank you for your influence and Dan and his wife Natalie's life for you being a part of them. Thank you for that. And so I've asked Dan just to, Dan, will you just tell them your story? I've kind of set this up for you now, okay?
Big pressure.
Yeah, but I just want them to hear, because when I hear your story, I get motivated. Good. And I want God to use that in our lives. So tell them, would you?
Okay, so just by way of background, I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. And this was well before Nashville was cool. it's crazy these days, but that might date me, actually. So I grew up in Nashville. I've got three older siblings, and I went to church. Went to church a lot. You know, it was Sunday morning, Sunday night, Monday night, Wednesday night. I had plenty of experience, but certainly didn't embrace it as a child and in my youth. Went to high school and went to college, and I graduated from a school in New York, and I was starting my career, and that career was I was an Army officer, and at the time, you really couldn't have told me, anything about what I needed to do, because I knew it. I didn't need advice. I didn't need anybody, telling me, hey, this is what you need to be to be successful, or this is what happiness is. I knew all of that, and you certainly, at 23, you're invincible, and so I created this path, and this path was dictated entirely by me, and that path. You look back at it, and you laugh at yourself and the follies of your youth. So I started, opened up the throttle, and off I went, and I spent 5 years in the U.S. Army and got out, and I went to South Africa for a long time, and I met a good South African gal, and we got married, and then I had some kids, and this path that I had created for myself was just torturous, actually. I had no idea what I was doing when I created this path, and every day that I walked down, it just compounded all of the problems, and probably about 4 years ago, it just came to an all screeching halt, and I burned myself out, and I was delusional about whether or not the value of myself and applying it to maybe money that I had made or positions that I held, and it was just a facade, and I realized that I had been chasing happiness and I couldn't find it, and so in that process I also burnt out my own marriage, which is terrible to say, but it's true. I went through this. I went through this trauma about it, and the trauma was it was kind of familiar, to be honest. I didn't eat much and I didn't sleep much, and the things you normally do when you're stressed, beyond belief. But I had done that before in my life. When I was 19, my mom died in a car wreck.
Wow.
And so. You have no idea, I had no idea how to take the next breath and the next step, and time in that scenario, time just can't happen quick enough for it to resolve the issues. And so I had little to no guidance, and so I just numbed myself with every vice that you could ever imagine, and that was incredibly destructive. That was my early 20s, and so when, I'm going through this challenge again here recently, and thank goodness I realized that was not the solution, so I needed at least to find another solution, I was go to church, and I can't really explain it. There's no logic really to it, but I knew that, and it was incredibly unusual in my life, but I know that I needed to go to church, And so I started that path, and I started going to churches, you know, around here in Lexington, and I'd moved back from South Africa, and, you know, the marriage was a mess. I was a mess. Fortunately, my kids were not, and they're awesome. But, yeah, and so that's when I met Tim, and it was a meeting that Tim and I had in November of 2016, and I don't remember the details necessarily about the you know, what we talked about, but it actually was insignificant. The result of that was, you know, like the weeks and maybe the days and months after that, it was me holding up this mirror, and looking at myself and doing a lot of self-evaluation, and so it wasn't a normal mirror. It was like these, you know, women's compact mirrors where you see all the flaws. And I hated what I saw. And so what I saw and who I was and who I'd become, it was just a mess. And so, yeah, I can't remember if Tim reached back out or I reached out to him or whatever it was. But, you know, I just said, man, I need help. And you talk about vulnerabilities, and I'll get to that in just a second. But, yeah, so Tim and I got back together, and I don't know, it couldn't have been too long. It was, you know, two or three meetings. And he said, well, you know, do you want to have a relationship with Jesus? Yes, I do. And so I did that. And, you know, plowed into, you know, it was Panera's. It was the corner of the restaurant, and I'll never forget it. But to be honest with you, that was a momentous event in my life. But probably, you know, the biggest question I had was, you know, what now? Like, what? Okay, so I've done this. And so for the past, I don't know, 12 months, 12 plus months?
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you, it's been a long, long time. And Tim and I have been meeting for, you know, every other week or every week sometimes at the Panera. And he just... You know, he's the coach, he's the teacher, he's the mentor, and you know, I'm just the student. And so, you know, he just takes me through, you know, what being a Christian is. And yeah, it's been a great journey. I remember actually one of the first times that we met, I said, well, how do you pray? Like something as basic as that. And it was like humbling for me just to look in the mirror and just realize I didn't even know how to pray, which is you know, just crazy for me to go through that process. But yeah, so we started at 101, at Jesus 101, and yeah, I mean the impact that it's made. I mean, it's made a huge impact. I got baptized on 10th of December here. You know, which is amazing, and I think you know that. Probably have a patience about me that I've never really experienced, and I probably never would have been able to experience that. And you know, the rest of my life I spent, you know, running down this road and chasing, you know, whatever it was, you know, positions and money and authority and titles and all these things that I didn't have. And I guess right now, you know, it's just about, you know, just being gracious about what I do have. And then, you know, praying daily. Tim says, you know, pray in the morning. I do that. I'm a pretty good student. And so, yeah, every morning I thank the good Lord for everything that I have and don't care about the things that I don't have. But the biggest thing, I mean, the biggest difference is that, you know, it's just this fear of the unknown that I was running from for so long. And it's probably just about embracing that unknown and trusting the Lord. And just leaning in on you don't, sorry, I don't have to have the reins of my life, and I you know, I can give that up, and I can probably be a little more vulnerable.
Awesome. Thank you, man. That was great. That was awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, you can stay. Yep. See what I mean? And you know what? You have a story just like that. Oh, it may not be those exact details, but you have a story that's that powerful. Did you watch Dan's eyes? Did you hear? Were you drawn in? Of course you were, because what he was sharing was real. and personal, and his change. So let me ask you, would you consider sharing your story with someone this summer? Can you even imagine the impact as we get ready to move into our new facility if everyone in this room would share their story with someone this summer? Can you imagine what God could do in the lives of your family and your friends and the people that you work with by simply telling, here's what I was, here's what changed, I met Jesus, and here's how my life is now. I'm going to ask you to do it, and I'm going to claim it. And if you'll tell me those names, I will pray with you and pray for you as you get ready to tell your story to people. Let me ask you, when you share your story, does your story include a time when you came into a relationship with God through Jesus? If it doesn't, the greatest thing that could happen to you is what happened to Dan at Panera Bread, is when he invited Jesus Christ into his life. And you can do that by just simply realizing that you're a sinner, that you've sinned, that you've gone against God, believing that Jesus came to earth and died for you a horrible death, but to pay for your sin. And then this is really important. With your own words, you ask him, like Dan did, to come into your life and save you and change you and forgive you. My prayer is that if you've not done that, you'll do it today. Father, thank you for Dan. Thank you for the story and what it means just to hear a story, how powerful it is in our lives. Thank you for the way you're using this and that you'll use our stories to bring people to know you. And I pray, God, that you would move in this place. For those who are here who may never have received you, will you use Dan's story and even Paul's story to draw them into a real relationship with you? And for the rest of us that have met you, but we haven't told our story in a couple of weeks or a couple of months or never, will you please, God, help us to share our story with people this summer? And will you do a big work in our church for your glory as we do it? It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.